Jesus' passion and his crucifixion shouldn't have been a surprise for anyone who was paying attention. After all, his passion and crucifixion had been predicted all the way through the Old Testament. The prophets talked about it. Isaiah talked about it. And even Jesus himself predicted it. This is the second time in this gospel that Mark says that he was telling his disciples about his passion. The gospel reading from St. Mark today was Jesus' second prediction. But the world wasn't paying any attention, and the disciples weren't paying attention. He was teaching his disciples and telling them, the Son of Man is to be handed over to men, and they will kill him. And after 3 days, after his death, the Son of Man will rise. In that first reading from the Book of Wisdom, from the Old Testament, we hear a foreshadowing that was right there in the literature of the Old Testament. With revilement and torture, let us put the just one to the test, that we may have proof of his gentleness and try his patience. Let us condemn him to a shameful death, for according to his own words, God will take care of him. That's a prophecy. That's a passion prophecy. There was no surprise here. It was foretold over and over and over again. You can find many different references like this. Why was Jesus tortured and killed? As wisdom tells us, the wicked say, let us beset the just one, because he is obnoxious to us. He sets himself against our doings. Wickedness and sin killed the just one, Jesus. When I reflect on the resurrection and you see it having been expected, told about, I begin to think about it in a different way, as something so impactful that it created echo waves not only going into the future, but like ripples even going into the past, that it was something that happened at the center of history. But it was because of sin and wickedness. And then St. James presents us with a stark discussion of sin and wickedness. Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every foul practice. Sin. It affects all of us. If we say we have not sinned, then we blaspheme against the Holy Spirit. We are all sinners. Sin makes us numb to the point that we no longer realize it. Sin is desensitizing and progressive, and gradually we become tolerant and comfortable with our habits of sin. Just look at our lack of national action against the sin of killing our own children and dismembering babies in the womb. We even subsidize these activities with our taxes. This is our nation. We see the way that sin affected Jesus' disciples. Here was Jesus teaching him about the most important moment in the history of the world, something that had been predicted. He was teaching them about his passion. He wasn't talking about next week's football game. He was talking about something very important. He had taken them apart by themselves so that he could have their undivided attention. However, they were still very much men of the world. Their own worldly ambition and jealousy were more important to them at that point in time. Obviously, they weren't paying attention to Jesus. He began to ask them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they remained silent. They knew they were wrong. They'd been discussing among themselves on the way who was the greatest, and Jesus knew it. Clearly, they were not ready to lead Jesus' church. They had not yet chosen to serve him and give their lives for him and follow him and turn their backs on the ways of the world. We saw what they chose. Perhaps there's no better test of whether a person is a Christian than by that person's understanding of leadership. In fact, there's a stark divide between the way the world sees leadership, the secular view of leadership, and Christians' view of leadership. What is Christian leadership? They're at opposite poles. Secular, worldly leadership emphasizes ambition and passion for leadership and power. Selfish ambition is tolerated. It's expected in secular leadership. We celebrate it. Just look at the current presidential debates that are going on. And Jesus, on the other hand, immediately and directly challenges the ambitious desires of his disciples, saying pointedly, right on the spot, if anyone wishes to be first, he shall be the last of all and the servant of all. This is not worldly leadership. This is not secular leadership. The world would not understand and still doesn't understand this form of leadership of innocence. Leadership of service. Leadership by servants. Taking a child, he placed it in their midst, and putting his arms around it, he said to them, "Whoever receives one child such as this in my name receives me. And whoever receives me receives not me, but the one who sent me." This week, history is going to happen. Serious, notable, unusual history. Pay attention to the Pope's visit this week. It's already starting. Watch closely what he does. Look how he leads. Look how he teaches. He will not be in friendly territory. But he's going to teach us by his example to be merciful, to be servant, to know Jesus' mercy. Watch very carefully how he will stand toe-to-toe, face-to-face with the powerful in Cuba and in our nation. And he'll speak God's truth to them. Francis will speak this week truth to power. Watch it very carefully. And they will not understand him because they don't understand the just one. There was a news release yesterday that said that the president has invited to the White House transgenders and people who disagree with the Pope. If you were a host for somebody, would you invite the enemies of that person into your reception of him? Is that hospitality? That's in your face. Watch. They want photo ops between the Pope and these other people. This is a power play by the world. All of these leaders arrived at their positions of power through selfish ambition. They will test him this week. He will teach our leaders about the truth of marriage and the value of a child's life. But he will appear obnoxious to our leaders, and they will try to trip him up, just like we heard in the first book of wisdom. Go back and read it tonight, and you will see what's going to happen this week. He sets himself against our doings. He will reproach them and us for our transgressions against the most helpless and against our distortions of God's law that have now become law in our nation. Pope Francis will come as a prophet and may be treated like a prophet. The world is not kind with prophets. Pray with me this week for our Pope, for our nation.